You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ThroughTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. Today's show features me talking to Brady Klopfer, who you can find on Twitter at BradyKlopferNBA. He's a writer over at Golden State of Mind, The Athletic, where he covers the LA Sparks, and he also writes for B-Ball Breakdown. We're also just going to quickly talk about Kevin Love's status and what's going on with him right now, and we're also going to touch on the two-way players. But if you aren't already, you can subscribe to Locked On Cavaliers on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Please leave a five-star rating and review. That is the best way to support the show. And thanks everyone who has already done that and has been listening. And if you want to answer your have mailbag questions answered, you can send those to lockedoncavs@gmail.com or to at lockedoncavs on Twitter. We'll be doing a mailbag here again shortly, perhaps recording it on Facebook Live as well. So please tune into that and submit your questions ahead of time. And again, look for those tweets to call for questions. So to start with the Kevin Love news, according to Joe Vardon of The Athletic, who spoke to Love in New York, Love is targeting a mid-January return from his foot surgery. He's going to play, obviously, when he comes back, it seems. The Cavs, for what it's worth, have not updated Love's status. This is coming from Love to Vardon, and those guys have a good relationship, as far as I know. The Cavs are still very bad. They are still near the bottom of the league right now. Love probably, I think it's fair to say, has not quite envisioned this happening and how bad the Cavs have been this year. He wasn't healthy to start the year. He was, again, this is the guy that was shooting under 30% from three, 32.3% from the field when he went down. This was not good Kevin Love when he left and had surgery. He really was the doom of the Cavs. He could have been great, and maybe they would have been good anyway, but Tristan Thompson being great as he's been, and Larry Nance playing better and so on, it didn't really help. But no Kevin Love means there's no guy for the Cavs to really rely on for anything. Now, he's going to make the Cavs better. They are, again, they've won five games without him. The best thing for the Cavs' future, even when Love comes back, though, is for them to be bad. And this is something Vardon, I think, wrote about pretty well here. They want Zion. They want R.J. Barrett, Cam Reddish. Nazir Little perhaps jumps in there as well. They need to get a top three pick. And the best odds of that, and especially with the lottery odds right now being what they are and being level for the top three, that gets a little dicey. So as of record this at 9:44 p.m. on Tuesday, December 4th, the Cavs are 5-18. They're a game back of the league worst Suns, who are 4-19. Had they lost to Brooklyn, they actually would have tied the Suns, which would have been good for them at least. But they have a 12.5% chance of the number one pick, a little under 50% chance of a top four pick. You want to stack those odds just a little bit better. Finishing in the bottom three would be, frankly, very good for the Cavs and what they're kind of looking to do. According to Vardon's story, the big thing for them is that they want to give their quickest path to being back, to being competitive, involves Sexton developing, a healthy Kevin Love, and a player at the top of next year's draft. There are other variables there, of course. You need to, I think, make some smart free agency decisions in next summer. Spend the little money you have on guys that will fit. You need Jetty to take a leap. You need Tristan to stay healthy. You need Nance to keep getting better and playing healthy. You need to figure out what kind of system you're going to run. There's a lot of variables. It's not as simple as Kevin Sexton being good and Love getting healthy and them getting a really good young player. The young player is also just going to struggle, realistically, because that's a young player. But that's the path. And according to this report, Cavs officials said to Vardon that there's been no discussion of trading Love and they want to get him on the court with Sexton. I think that's realistically a good thing too. I think Sexton really has not benefited from playing with a guy like Love, who can really take some of the attention off of him and really help him out. Maybe I don't think this Cavs team is going to necessarily get pushed up, but you know, could Kevin Love get them out to the sixth worst team in the league? I think that's theoretically possible, considering they're only two games ahead of the Nets and the Knicks right now. and the Knicks are just atrocious. And you guys, anyone who watched like the Nets game of the night saw how bad the Nets are as well. It's a tough reality, but Kevin Love's going to come back. I think it's good for Sexton development, but does he push them in a way that makes them good? I don't know, but that's just where we're at with Kevin Love right now. He's going to come back. He's going to come back sooner rather than later, and it doesn't sound like they're going to trade him. I also think, to be fair, it would be very hard for him to be traded this year just because he's going to come back middle to late January, and the deadline's on February 7th. I do maintain that like a Love trade would be most likely next summer, but we'll see how he looks. We'll see what happens. Anything theoretically is possible, but that's where with Kevin Love. He's going to come back, it seems like. They're not going to trade him, and they're going to just kind of roll with it. I expect other trades, George Hill, other guys too, but we'll have to see what the future for Love looks like. We'll see. So, according to Vartan, that he had scans on his foot Monday, and they came up clean, and he can start ramming up his workouts in 3 to 4 weeks. So that would be beginning of the year. He gets a couple weeks, and then he's good to go, theoretically. So that's sort of what the timeline looks like for Kevin Love. And then also the other news that has come out since the last time a podcast went up was that the Cavs moved on from both their 2-way contract signees. That's Billy Preston, and that is Andrew Harrison. Preston, of course, was sort of the notable one there because he was this highly touted high school American. He was on the summer league roster. He was a project player. He didn't start in Canton. His numbers were not particularly good. From what I saw, he looked a little bit rough, but I don't know if I love the fact that they moved on from him. I get moving on from Harrison. I can justify that. I can understand why you maybe don't want to keep him around because he doesn't really feel a need. I think it would have made sense if you do start training point guards, you maybe just want to have one around just in case, but I can get it. But the Cavs signed Jalen Jones and Jared Blossom game, who is a, they're both forwards. They're both, or Jaron Blossingame, excuse me. They are both 6'7 forwards. They're not particularly NBA guys. We're going to talk about both of them more actually on Friday in this week's draft breakdown with Trevor Magnotti about if there's actually any value to these guys. If I'm the Cavs, I understand that they want wing depth. I think they would certainly like to have someone that they can maybe call up when they need to because they've had so many injuries, and Preston was not that this season, but he's a guy that if he works out, he could be a rotation player, could be someone that you do a really nice job of developing. And again, 6.1 points and 3.8 rebounds per game in 10 bench appearances is not a lot in the G League. It doesn't speak to a player that's ready to contribute right now, but I don't think that should have ever been the expectation for him. I think it tells you that they just were sure, that they were just became less convinced he could be anything, and they value just having guys that could potentially come up and potentially fill in some gaps there. So this is still a very early thing. It's still very early in the two-way contract world. It's only the second year. We also just don't exactly know. But what is up with Preston? According to the last time I talked to the Charge, they kid it basically commit to being in the G League player pool because he had played 10 games with the Charge. They would retain his rights, so he would still be in the Cavs system unless another NBA team signed him to a 10-day deal. It seems unlikely, or signed him to a two-way deal or a contract. So that's basically how they could lose him, but maybe they just don't think that's likely. It's probably not that big of a deal anyway. The odds of Preston end up being good were not particularly high. It's a very thin margin, a very hard path to walk to develop a guy like that, but it sort of is what it is. So that's where we're at. We're going to talk more about this Friday, more about what the Cavs might be doing with two-way contracts again on Friday with Trevor Magnotti. We're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear from our sponsors today, Action Heat, as well as our insert ad. And then you're going to hear from me and Brady Clawford talking about Cavs Warriors and what's coming Wednesday night in Cleveland. We'll talk to you again here in a minute with more Locked On Cavs. Today's podcast is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery heated clothing. It's heat on demand at the touch of a button. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via panels similar to a heated car seat. The temperature can reach up to 135 degrees and are powered by rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion batteries that last up to 12 hours when discharged, and those batteries can be reused to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. This is a perfect gift for any friend or family on your holiday list. This is great for anyone who works outdoors, skiers or snowboarders, or anyone that loves the outdoors and hates being cold. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body and comes in heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts and long johns. you can stay cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. It's available in men's and women's, and they have great new styles and models just released for the winter season. We've got a special deal for our listeners today. You can save 20% off your entire order by going to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything Action has to offer. I love it. I use it now when I go downtown and it's freezing, and I go running and it's freezing. And again, you can join me, use Action Heat, and get the most out of it by going to actionheat.com/lockedon or use the coupon code LOCKEDON to save 20% at checkout. And joining me now is Brady Klopfer. He is a writer at Golden State of Mind, SB Nation's great, great Warriors blog, The Athletic, where he writes about the LA Sparks, and he also writes a B-ball breakdown. Brady, how's it going?
Pretty good, Chris. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. So this is a very different Cavs-Warrior setup. Anthony Slater at The Athletic actually had a good piece about this today where a lot of the big Warriors were quoted. David Griffin was quoted as well, although he'd think he was, in his quotes, a bit too... thinks a little too highly of how the Cavs are going to fan base are going to react to this game on Wednesday night. But pretty for this season with the Warriors, obviously a lot of injuries. There was the KD Draymond thing. Steph's been out after he's playing just incredibly. But what has the story in your mind been for this team so far this year? What has it been like following and thinking about this team that is in another year of its dynasty, but going through some different types of adversity?
Well, it's kind of weird with a dynastic team because the storylines kind of tend to be the things that you would expect to be more supplemental. You know, on most teams, the main storyline is how good are you, how bad are you, and those other things kind of slide to the side. But with the Warriors being the heavy favorites always, those stories that would usually be on the side are kind of brought to the forefront because everyone just doesn't really care about the results because they know they're their favorites, win or lose. So really just the adversity they've had to overcome. And, you know, you kind of have to put adversity in quotes when you're talking about a team as stacked as the Warriors. But the feud with Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, that really shook the organization. First time we've really kind of seen some holes in the foundation. And then just the injuries. Like you said, Steph Curry's missed 11 games, I believe. Draymond Green is out for the rest of this road trip, which is going to put him at 14 games missed. Sean Livingston has missed a lot of games. DeMarcus Cousins isn't back yet. And the guy starting in place of him, Damian Jones, just suffered a season-ending injury. So really, it's just been how strong is the core of this dynasty relative to the adversity that they haven't had to face much of in this four-year run. And right now, it's kind of coming down on them really hard, both in the form of bad luck with the injuries and self-inflicted with that altercation between Green and Durant.
With Curry, he was playing, I think, like as good as I think we've seen him play since KD came before he got hurt. Now he's been back. He's only been back for like two games, I think. But what has he looked like since he's come back from that long, long absence? Has he been? I mean, he's obviously there's going to be some rust. There's going to be some, you know, some time getting back for anyone that's missed a lot of time. George Hill is obviously for the Cavs has had that issue the other night, and Steph's obviously at a different level. But what has Steph kind of had to go through and what does he look like since he's come back from injury?
Well, his first game back was really rough. It was just a lot of rust, as you, like you said, you would expect. He didn't shoot very efficiently. He had 7 turnovers, and that was against the Pistons, not exactly a team that's going to give you fits defensively. But in his second game, he looked like himself. He looked much more fluid, much more confident, was making shots, was taking care of the ball. Admittedly, he was going up against Trae Young, who is quite arguably the worst defensive point guard in the league. So you kind of have to take that performance with a grain of salt. But I think it always takes him a while with this iteration of the team to really get back into a groove because it's just such an interesting dynamic with him and Durant, both being ball dominant superstars, two of the best scorers the league's ever seen. That's a hard fit to make work perfectly. And I think what we saw early in the season was really the first time that they were fully making it work to the best of its abilities. It was the first time they both looked comfortable with each other and understanding what roles they could have and understanding that each of them can be aggressive and it's not going to hurt or offend the other. But I think, especially after Durant had such a great stretch when Curry went out, Curry returned and Durant had 40 or more points in 3 consecutive games. And so I think it's taken him a little bit of time to step back into where he was, to find that right dynamic of understanding how aggressive he can be while still letting KD have the aggression that he needs to be successful. So I would expect it to be another game or two before he's really back to that level that he was at the beginning of the year. But after two games, it's certainly trending upwards. He looked pretty close against the Hawks.
Offensively, this is a team that Kerr recently just said that, you know, he wants them to, you know, shoot some more threes and like wants that part of the offense to kind of get back up to what it was, or at least like just be more willing to shoot a bunch of threes. I mean, is that something that you feel like needs to happen for this group? And what, is there a reason that, I mean, just what does the makeup of this offense look like? Is it the same sort of offense that Cavs fans would have seen at least versions of in the last few finals?
It's pretty similar, yeah. And that, I think, is where some of the criticisms are coming from. It's still a really great offense, but I've long maintained with this team that it's really hard to evolve and improve when you're in first place, because you don't really see what you have to do differently when you're not chasing anyone. And the people behind you, they see what they have to do to catch up to you. And I think that's, in a way, what we're seeing. They're still a great offense. They're second in the league in offensive rating, despite the fact that Curry has missed 11 of their 25 games. And they haven't had Cousins yet, and Green's been out a lot. So it's still a highly successful offense, but the league is starting to evolve. They're starting to see what they need to do to surpass the Warriors, and a huge part of that is shooting way more threes. So that, I think, is where the criticisms are coming from, and they're fair criticisms in that regard. The Warriors' offense would be better if they shot more threes. Klay and Durant both shoot a lot of mid-range jumpers, and Durant in particular shoots them instead of three-pointers. A lot of times he'll catch the ball behind the arc on a defender that he can easily rise up over, and he'll just dribble into a contested 18, 19 footer, which is still a pretty high efficiency shot when you're Kevin Durant, but it would be better behind the three-point line. So there's a lot of room for improvement, and that's where the critiques are coming from, but it's one of those kind of interesting situations where on the one hand, you can see how they could be better. On the other hand, they're so ridiculously good offensively, even with these criticisms, that it's hard to actually be that worked up about it. But ultimately, yeah, it's a very similar offense to what the Cavs are used to seeing from this team.
Yeah, looking at cleaning the glass and looking at how they're tracking three-point shots this year, and based on all the data they have, which goes back to 2004-05, so this year, 31.1% of their shots are three-pointers. That's 20th in the league. I think the comparison here that tells you the most about how the league has changed, in 08-09, they were 21st in the league at 20.5%. Like, that just tells you like how much many more threes, even though the Warriors are like relying on the mid-range. And if you look at that, they're second in the league at 40.5% of their shots in the mid-range. And Cavs fans know, like, this is going to be a game, a lot of mid-range, because of how many mid-range shots the Cavs take themselves. It's going to be kind of, I think that'll just be kind of interesting, because obviously the Warriors are going to be, having KD shoot them is one thing, and having Colin Sexton shoot them is a very, very different thing on the other end of the very end of the spectrum. Broadly speaking, we don't know like who seems to be like the team to really push them this year. Maybe it's Toronto. Maybe Houston figures it out. Maybe Denver is for real. But when you look at this group, is this a more vulnerable Warriors team than what you've seen the last couple of years? And B, I mean, has your opinion on that and on them changed in a meaningful way since the season started and you've actually got to see them play games this year as opposed to just evaluating what they were on paper?
I think this is a little bit of a cop-out answer, but I think it really comes down to the injuries. If they're healthy, I think they are a much less vulnerable team than in years past, or especially compared to last year. For three main reasons, I should say. The first being Curry and Durant just look way more comfortable playing alongside each other this year than in either of the first 2 years. The second is the bench is just a much better fit this year. Jonas Derebko is filling the role that they thought Omer Caspi would play, and he's actually doing it well. Quinn Cook is playing better than Nick Young played. Kevon Looney's gotten better. They're just a deeper team that can withstand some issues a little bit better. And then, you know, the big calling card here is DeMarcus Cousins. I've often said that Cousins doesn't really raise their ceiling. I don't think he really makes them that much better when they're at their best. But he really raises their floor. He's just a historically great safety net, so that if someone is slumping, if Durant is double teamed and needs a release valve, if someone's injured, they just have another superstar, all-star there. So if they're healthy, I think this is a far less vulnerable team. I'm just not sure what anyone can do to beat them. But to answer your question about if anything has changed through the first 25 games of the year, they haven't been healthy. And it's not just one player missing time. You know, they have five all-stars. Three of them have missed significant chunks of this season. And the bench players have been really dinged up as well. So right now, with that information, I think they are more vulnerable. But if we assume that they're going to be relatively healthy when the playoffs roll around, they strike me as a team that can only be beaten by themselves.
That's how I kind of feel too. I kind of want to see if there is a team that really can push them. I want to see different teams kind of challenge them. Like, I'd be interested in Denver just to kind of seeing what they would do. And I kind of hope, I think Toronto, just because of Kawhi and because of Lowry, just kind of being pressure points on ways to combat them, I think would be really interesting too, especially because they moved the ball well in the Siakam. I think there's at least some interest there, but they'd probably win that. Like, if they're healthy, they're probably winning that in five games anyway. Like, the gap there can just be, as everyone sort of knows, like, unreal. Last thing, this is a very different Cavs Warriors game than anything we've seen in the last 4 years. Different level of anticipation, different level of rivalry, because there is no rivalry anymore. There's just a big gap between these two teams and where they are at. But what is something you are looking forward to seeing? For me, I'll just say that I just want to see what happens with Colin Sexton in this game. Defensively, he has really bad habits of trying to just chase around one guy. And it's been particular when it's been a big name point guard, or like when they played the Hawks, it was trying to do everything he could against Trae Young and just kind of not running the defensive scheme that then Coach Ty Lue wanted to run. I don't know who they're going to have him defend. I sort of wonder, I mean, he's going to have a tough matchup either way in the wing, but I would want to see how he would handle just having to chase around Curry and then the maze of screens that Curry does, and having Curry just be willing to bomb shots from like 35 feet or whatever. Like, I that to me would be just something, even if it's sort of me being a masochist in some way. But is there something to you that you're interested in seeing in this game, even though it's probably going to be a Warriors win by like 25?
Yeah, a few different things. That is honestly the biggest thing that I'm looking for. I love watching Sexton play defense. I hope he's matched up against Curry. I just think that's such a unique challenge, especially for a young defender, because it really tests not only your physical abilities, but your intellect and your discipline is a huge one, because Curry is just, he's as much of a weapon moving backwards as he is moving forwards. And that creates a really interesting puzzle for defenders. And a lot of young defenders don't really have the understanding or the discipline to know what to do in that situation. But beyond that, I really like Osman. I just really like watching him play. I know he's been very hit and miss this year. And he's going to have a very difficult assignment regardless of who he's matched up against. But I just enjoy watching the kid play. I think he's an interesting player. I think he's a creative player. I think he's brings some fun energy to the court. And then finally, I always enjoy watching when a team has made a coaching change, what looks different. I'm obviously probably more familiar with the Cavs than any team other than the Warriors, just given, you know, they've had 30 matchups over the last 4 years. Obviously, it wasn't Ty Lue at the helm for all of those matchups, but pretty used to how the team plays with Ty Lue. And now I'm excited to see a little bit closer look at how Larry Drew attacks some of those same problems that Ty Lue had to attack, and to see if he can get a team that is already out of playoff contention to get up big for the best team in the league, or whether they just roll over and play dead. So that will be a fun one to look for.
Yeah, and it's a Cavs team. It did come off a win that they were very happy with against the Nets the other night, and kind of sneaking out there when Alec Burks, of all people, hitting a game-winning dunk into that game. Just the kind of season it's been. But you can find Brady on Twitter at Brady Klopp for NBA. That's Brady, B-R-A-D-Y. Klopfer is K-L-O-P-F-E-R. NBA on Twitter. Again, Golden State of Mind, The Athletic, and B-Ball Breakdown. Brady, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Thanks again to Brady Klopfer for coming on today's show. Again, find him on Twitter at BradyKlopferNBA. We're going to be back to more recapping Cavs Warriors and then talking some tactics with Mike Savigano from Fifth Sword. In this week's Tactics Thursday, we are going to be discussing two guard lineups with George Hill and Colin Sexton and how Hill's return has really impacted the rotation and will continue to do so. And also talk about what Colin Sexton's look like off ball. They're kind of related things, so we're going to dive deep into those topics. But stay tuned tomorrow for that Cavs Warriors recap and some Tactics Thursday breakdowns with me and Mike Zafgano. As always, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. The podcast is on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And if you're looking for some great Browns coverage as well, check out Locked On Browns. Jeff Lloyd is doing a fantastic job. Put that in your rotation of podcasts. A lot of great stuff in the Locked On Network. And as always, we're happy to be here doing it. Happy to be here covering the Cavs. Cavs Warriors tonight, enjoy. It's going to be a little bit different than we've seen in the past couple years, but still has some intrigue to it, at least for this first time. But I'm Chris Manning, your host of Locked On Cavaliers. Again, Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. We'll talk to you tomorrow.